charge the Ion Accelerator. It's time to forge the narrative.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Forge the Narrative. My name is Paul, your host, Wheel of All Souls Podcast, joined by Tanya Gates.
Hey, everybody.
And Red Powell.
What up?
How are y'all doing this evening?
I'm doing really good. I am back from one event, and now I'm straight into stress painting for the next event. So, you know, I'm on this conveyor belt that is, like, competitive Warhammer.
It's
but
a circle of life.
It is, yeah.
I went to a concert last night. You may tell that in my voice a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah, happy and doing stuff. And now we get to talk about some Warhammer things in the middle of this segment. So in this episode, we're going to talk about some units in the Imperial Agents, like we mentioned on the last week's episode. And in the middle of the show, I have a segment on Warcry with a gentleman that is on the U.S. events team and kind of like basically the a real good just enthusiast for Warcry and getting his thoughts on why he likes the game. We talk a little bit about the Briar and Bone that recently came up for pre-order, and then we'll come back for the second part of this show. So Imperial Agents, you know, something that, you know, basically a lot of players can take advantage of if they want to. If they have an Imperial army, yeah, they can sprinkle it into their forces, and maybe, you know, let's talk about some of those things that could be sprinkled in, you know, via the Agents rule, you know, or you can play them as standalones. And last week we didn't really talk about like the Inquisitors or the Assassins, and you know, we may see some of those start to pop up. So we want to start with just the actual Inquisitor. Like, this is the non-named, non-special character Inquisitor.
Yeah.
That's what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and you know, so just kind of going into it, that admittedly there is something. We went through the detachments last time, right? And they have certain buffs for certain folks who are set in those detachments, right? Like Ordo Hereticus or Ordo Malleus for witch hunters and demon hunters respectively. And so I think it's kind of important to bring up that in this case, the Inquisitor, and you know, you can always correct me if I'm wrong because I may be making a mistake here, but he doesn't have those keywords just to start out. And so it doesn't fit the same way in his keywords. So you're going to have to go to some of the more specific, such as Inquisitor Codiez or Draxus or Greyfax, right? Those are the three that are specific to those given ones. But this Inquisitor is still great for, I mean, I personally love the Inquisitor model. I love and have several of my own homemade versions. And so going into it, it's kind of cool. Again, you can choose, much as it has been for the Inquisitors in old, you can choose to either make one Psyker or not Psyker. And if you choose to, so Blessed Wardings is what they have if they aren't a Psyker, and that gives the entire unit they're leading a 6-up invuln save, which is nice. Yep. And then
let's talk about that for just one second, is that these are mostly like toughness 3 frames.
That's right.
But there's a whole lot of like ability to build in what might be some situational endurance.
Right. Some little buffs here and there. And that's the Inquisitor's retinue. If an Inquisitor is leading it, they're actually -1 to wound whenever they take a hit, which is another kind of indicator like what you're talking about and some of those things that add in. Now, if you don't take Blessed Wardings and you decide to make them a Psyker, they get Psychic Gifts, which gives them the keyword. And then they also have access to the Force Weapon, which is one less attack, but it is one higher strength, and it does D3 damage versus just one damage with their normal weapon. And then it also gives them access to Psychic Shockwave. I mean, and here's kind of the thing, and as we've seen with other things, this Psychic Shockwave, Devastating Wounds, Psychic, and Torrent, 18 inches, 2d6, Strength 3, AP -2 and 1. But that Devastating Wounds kind of what, you know, carries it through.
That's pretty good. And that's just to the basic Inquisitor model. The one, there's been several that have come out over the years, but they've mixed in that kind of like, what is it, like Pilgrim hat? I mean, I don't really like.
Yeah.
Witch Hunter.
It's definitely, it is the kind of the Warhammer Witch Hunter theme, the Solomon Kane Witch Hunter look, which I appreciate. And also, again, have taken advantage of because there's some blending there from Age of Sigmar or Warhammer Fantasy, you know, Warhammer in the old world. Those witch hunters, that's a stereotype hat right there that you see them wearing through. And so it's cool to see the old models staying alive.
Next one in the book, though, is Inquisitor Codiez. Codiez has been like in and out of list for what, a decade now?
I mean, I almost longer than that. I mean, he's a mainstay that, I mean, he is on the cover of the Codex, and he's been on the cover before, and you've seen him all throughout. And he's always had some utility that you've kind of seen play out. He is slightly different than he used to be. He used to, Spy Network has gone through multiple renditions. Spy Network Now,
each time you're,
yeah, exactly. Back when, man, I loved that. It was so good.
Well, everyone took him, though. So it was like a duel of who's going to,
you knew it was
Cody
coming.
Is going to work. Yeah.
That's right. But so his Spy Network Now, each time your opponent gains a CP as the result of an ability, roll 1d6 on a 2+, you also gain 1 CP. And then, I mean, that's not bad. That's some utility there. He comes with Malefic Wardings, which is, while this model is leading a unit, models in that unit have a 6-up invuln and a 4-up invuln save against psychic attacks and attacks made by demon models. He does have his Cyber Eagle. The Cyber Eagle used to be kind of part and parcel with the model itself. Now it's its own little separate model, which is cool looking. It used to be a ranged attack. It is no longer a ranged attack. It is in your command phase. You can select one enemy unit within 18 inches of the bearer. Until the start of your next command phase, that unit cannot have the benefit of cover, which is, again, we go back to like all these little things that add together. I think Adam would call them terms of reference.
Terms and conditions.
Yeah. Terms and conditions. That's right. I wish he was here to correct me, but I know he's recovering from
I'll correct
travels.
You in spirit. Don't you ever listen.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So terms and conditions. And it is all these little things that add up, which I can understand may not be the most efficient thing, but it is pretty cool still in execution. I think it's pretty fun.
Well, all that stuff's cumulative. Like
it does. It
adds cover,
up.
Invulnerable saves, you know, those things. And then this, you know, being able to take away cover, add up to utility. Like, I think that's one of the takeaway from everything we're going to talk about today, is it all has kind of like situational utility. Also with the fact of maybe getting some more variance into your army, like look-wise, if you
right.
wanted to, which is kind of neat. Cody, of course, has a new model, which we talked a little bit about that last week. A lot of people have some feelings about this. And
I think that's fair. I mean, you know, Tanya, Age of Sigmar, like, a new Sigmarite comes out, right? A new Sigmarite hero. And what's the general, like, if you were going to rate the models of Sigmarite heroes when they come out, what would you put them on, like, a typical scale of 1 to 10?
I mean, most of them are, like, I'm going to say most of them are going to be between, like, a 7 and an 8, just because, like, there's so many Sigmarines, right?
Sure.
So, but I mean, they're beautiful.
Beautiful, right? And they're almost, sometimes I look at them and I'm like, man, these are a little dressed up. Like, I just don't see these guys like going out to like throw down with all the special robes and all the adornments and everything.
That's the beauty of Sigmar. They're like, the models have always had more buckles and pouches and stuff.
All right. Well, I think it's okay. And we come back to, again, Cody is that holds a special place in the heart of many players and on multiple covers and whatnot. So, I mean, what happened? Again, some nameless Sigmarite character is going to get, I mean, I think the average Sigmarite actually has more buckles than the current Cody has model. What's up?
I think you're exactly right. But that's so, the cool thing about plastics, though, is that they are, you know, a lot easier to
There's a lot you can do.
And
that's
get
right.
it the
that's
way you. Right. So if you aren't exactly happy with the way something looks, the game also incentivizes you to, or at least encourages you through various articles and accessibility to modify things.
That's right. Go back to however many lieutenants you may have, or literally any Space Marine kit. Take out all the purity seals and give that Master Inquisitor with the Spy Network that encompasses the galaxy. Give him a purity seal or two.
Yep. Malefic Wardings on Cody S here.
That's good.
While the model is leading a unit, models have a 6+ invulnerable save, which is very similar to the other Inquisitor, and a 4+ invulnerable save against psychic attacks and attacks made by demon models.
It definitely goes into playing up. Like, he's not just, okay, so he's Ordo Malleus. Like, you don't just take him and slap him in Paladins, because that's a redundant save bonus, right? And so it's not saying, like, we'll just go in there and and he automatically goes with Grey Knight Paladins, like we talked about last time, or Terminators. They're not technically Paladins, but right, important distinction. But you know, he gives that to one of the, you know, an Inquisitor's retinue. It could be that, again, is -1 to wound, and he's giving him those bonuses, and it's got that bonus against demons, which is, I mean, psychic attacks are something out. It is a real thing. It is something to be concerned about. So,
Thousand Sons, a bit of a menace.
That's right.
Demons, you see them creep up. Like, demons are better, in my opinion, when the meta is close to solved. Like, mm-hmm. There's a few, like, lists you know you're going to encounter, because the demon book or index is varied enough to where there's so many units, you can pick units that do really well against a known factor.
Right. Yeah, that's a great point.
And we're not there. We're not there, by the way. I'm not indicating that we are there. It's a very healthy, kind of thriving, evolving tapestry out there about what is the best list in any given tournament. So you might not see many demons, but once that starts to crystallize, demons seem to always make a comeback. And so knowing there's some tricks might be cool.
Yeah.
Next one is Inquisitor Draxus, which we've seen Draxus in a couple of lists not that long ago.
I think she's a little different in scope to a certain extent. She does have Xenos Hunter, so while this model's leading unit, each time a model in that unit makes an attack that targets an enemy unit that is not Imperium or Chaos, adds 1 to the hit roll. And then Psychic Veil in your command phase, this Psyker can use this ability. If it does, roll a d6. On a 1, this unit suffers d3 mortal wounds, so it's like her own perils. On a 2-up, the start of your next command phase, the Psyker's unit can only be selected as the target of a ranged attack if the attacking model is within 18 inches, which is great in some cases for all the different things that can happen.
Kind of like a little bit of a lone op type rule. With this model having a shuriken catapult, you know, and a dragon, isn't like a little bit hypocritical?
What?
Say that again?
Is it just a little bit hypocritical, you know, hunting the Xenos, despising the Xenos, but yet carrying around the Xenos stuff?
Well, clearly, I mean, you got to use the weapons against them, right? Like, and there is a whole thing, especially if you've, you know, and I know, Paul, you are familiar, but for those that aren't, there is a factional spectrum that you would put the Inquisitors on, whether or not, like, they may be of any given ordo, but they are either typically classified as a radical or a Puritan. And a Puritan follows the rules strictly, maybe a little too strictly. I don't think there's such a thing for the Imperium as it is. But then a radical is definitely one who's willing to bend the rules to whatever extent to try and get the job done. And I think, you know, in the scope of Inquisitors, Draxus may be showing some radical tendencies here with her. I mean, she does have some of the best looking armor, which also tends to, I think it has some styling of Eldari. She does have an Eldari weapon. And then, of course, her little dragon thing. I'm sure there's probably some, like, rivalry between Codia's Cyber Eagle and her dragon. It's like a Pokemon fight. No, that one didn't take, huh?
A list on here are the units that they can lead. We haven't mentioned this, but all the Inquisitors we talked about have the authority of the Inquisition, and that's the rule that allows them to join or to embark in any transport their bodyguard unit can also embark in.
Which is cool, because given the wide range of stuff that they can attack, you know, join, between the Death Watch, between the Sisters of Battle and whatnot, and the ability to join with their dedicated transports, it's got some options.
The next one up here is Inquisitor Greyfax, and this model is, I mean, every unit we talked about it has an amazing model so far, but I think Greyfax, the model, is just spectacular.
She really, I mean, again, like we were talking about the classic Inquisitor model, they took the classic Inquisitor model with the Witch Hunter hat and everything and generously took it to the next level. I know the model came out at the same time, I think, as Gilliman.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that it actually shows. I think that there's, like, she didn't just come out and then was immediately outclassed by Gilliman. He is a great model, and I know, like, he, like, garnered a ton of attention as the whole end of 7th edition came about. And yet, Grayfax was an awesome model that didn't just like get overshadowed and vanish in the background.
Yeah, it's hard to do with the Primarch.
That's right.
I gotta say, like, I just appreciate her cockiness, that she feels like she is so good that she can put a candle on her hat and not worry about being sniped at all.
That's that new 40K Bath and Body where, like, those candles are built to last.
What do you think it smells like? Is it vanilla?
I'm sure it's good, whatever it is, because I can't expect that she just, like, picks something that stank or something. Not with everything else she's got going on. Like, you can tell she's got real taste.
And she's wearing her good. Boots have, like, 6-inch heels.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, she is, like, she's on the level. She's probably one of the best looking, like I think she's got, like, Meryl Streep, like, Devil Wears Prada vibes. I can run with that.
And this is not sarcasm. I think that she's,
like, for real,
obviously very cool. So.
Yeah. I mean, if you haven't read the books and stuff with her, like, she's very cool. Very, very cool. And she's, like, best friends with Celestine and all other cool stuff. Like, it's pretty good. I mean, some people laugh because you read the books, and I may be, you know, just kind of summarizing there a little strongly, but, you know, it's good.
Well, look, you're whetting the appetite for people that want to learn more.
That's good. Yeah.
Was it Cyoculum? Cyoculum.
I know I mispronounce things all the time, but come on.
Cyoculum?
Yep, Cyoculum.
While this model is leading a unit, ranged weapons equipped by the models in that unit have the anti-psyker 4+ ability.
And that's what I'm talking about. You just attach that. I mean, and there's... I'm not saying that there's a single unit in this whole thing, except for maybe the Death Watch, which is different, and I don't think that she can actually go with them. But any of those squads, especially like the Arbetes, and some of the other ones, like, she can... I mean, it says Imperium Battleline Infantry. That's a pretty wide range of what Imperium Battleline Infantry is that she can be attached to. And they all have anti-psyker 4+. That's a pretty big deal. And some of those, again, we talked about some of the Voidfarers last time. There's like, you know, under certain terms and conditions, invoking the spirit of Adam, because I just miss him so much. They have lethal hits, and so it all starts stacking together, you know, and there are different things that have devastating wounds, and all of a sudden anti-psyker 4+, and you're achieving that, you know, it's all starting to click. And so I don't think it's a bridge too far to say that it's not efficient or useful, if that makes sense.
Next thing is the No Mercy. While this model is leading a unit, each time a model in that unit makes an attack that targets a unit that is below half strength, add 1 to the hit roll.
I always like these mechanics. I think that sometimes people find them too situational, but like below half strength isn't always that hard to achieve in some of these things.
No, but I think it kind of plays into what we're talking about earlier about her being, you know, very stern, very efficient.
Yeah, she does. She, again, on the whole spectrum of things, I don't think her and Draxus would get along very well.
And one rule follower, another rule breaker.
That's right.
Nice. Let's take that break and talk about the Warcry release coming out and just the Warcry game in general. That's going to be with me and Tim, and then we'll come back and let's talk about some assassins and stuff.
Nice.
See y'all in a minute.
FTN is brought to you by Discount Games Inc. Please visit them at www.discountgamesinc.com. And don't forget to ask Jay about ways to save even more on your hobby projects.
Hey everybody, welcome to an FTN Spotlight. Got Tim Engelman here. Tim, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me.
This is your first time on the show, and we're here to talk about Warcry, specifically like the new Briar and Bone that's coming out soon. Well, I think it's up for pre-order, and it'll be in people's hands very soon. But I kind of want to talk about Warcry as a whole. This is a skirmish-level game. It often gets compared to Kill Team, but it's set in the Age of Sigmar universe.
It is. They get compared quite a lot, but each system is good at different things. They're both fantastic skirmish systems, pretty easy to get into. Do you like, you know, the realms of fantasy more? Do you like futuristic stuff? I mean, that's an easy divider right there. There's a little bit more crunch in Kill Team in the way that, so weapon selection, like the kill teams are set rosters, right? But you can choose your weapons, things like that. And then Warcry, it's not set rosters. They do sell, you know, one box factions, like we're going to talk about with the Twist Wield and the Tyrannic Cohort. Those, you build the box and you're ready to play right out the gate. But there's also additional levels of list building and stuff that can go on as you get more comfortable with the rules and what you want your warband to do.
We just jumped into it, but like a brief introduction as to why you're on the show. You are a Warcry enthusiast. You and I work together on the US events team for the things that we do, you know, kind of talking about the hobby and working and playing the game and everything throughout the US Open series and some other conventions and that kind of stuff. And you, also a great painter, amazing painter.
Actually. Oh, thanks.
Award-winning painter.
But I do okay.
Looks amazing.
I'm no Slayer sword guy.
Yeah, and also a big enthusiast for Warcry, and so I thought it'd be great to have you on to talk about it. And so, you know, I may ask some high level questions, and feel free to, you know, get in as deep as you want over the next few minutes. But I thought it'd be great to come on and talk about this stuff. I know we were just talking about what some of the differences were, but can you talk a little bit about what you enjoy about Warcry?
Absolutely. So I did switch from 40K, longtime 40K guy, over to Sigmar, probably about 2015. And then I got really into that. And then a couple years ago, I tried out Warcry. It was in its second edition, the year it came out with the second edition of it. And the rules were, they seemed really clean, really balanced, super easy to learn. I look at it this way, like, if I can sit and explain the rules to literally anyone walking, you know, at one of our conventions, if I can explain the rules to literally anyone of any age, the youngest I've taught so far was probably like, you know, 6 or 7. The oldest was probably, I don't know, the old as a jar of dirt maybe, but, but I look at it this way. If I can sit there and spend 10, 15 minutes going over the basics with someone, you know, walk them through a round of the game, and then they've got it and can pretty much go from there. I think that's a success. So from a teaching standpoint, it's fantastic. But then, you know, that kind of gets you worried about, well, what about depth of play? If the rules are so simple, isn't it going to be just not very satisfying? But I find it the opposite to be true. Like I mentioned before, there's list building. So if you're one of those folks that loves to tinker with the list and, you know, optimizing, or if you have a theme in your head that you really want to make it work, you know, which that's, you know, that's me. That Warcry is perfect for it. You know, you don't have to paint up as many models. So the hobby side is a little more forgiving because you're not doing 100 of them, but it gives you that.
You just need a box of the faction that you're playing, right?
You just buy a box of the faction and you're ready to go. You can buy, if you have an existing AOS army or Underworlds warbands, those we have rules for those too. You can spend your extra time hobbying, you know, from instead of painting 100 models, you're painting, you know, 10 or guaranteed 15 or less, because the max size of a warband is 15. And with the compendium and the flexible list building, you can add allies, heroes from other factions, as long as you're within the same Grand Alliance. So there is some depth, and all those models have different abilities too. I liken the ability system to kind of like how you spend CP, you know, command points in 40K or Sigmar. They kind of unlock the inner awesomeness of your heroes and fighters and stuff.
So you do have you get some ablative points you can burn to kind of for power ups and cool effects.
So even if the warband, even if the box that you buy, it's a complete box and you can just slap it on the table and have a great game. Even if it when you start adding up the points when you're, you know, ready for that part of it, and you notice, hey, I'm 15 points short. Well, they introduced via White Dwarf the blessings, the divine blessing system, so you can take that 15 points and add it to say, or and add plus one to say a model's strength, or, you know, give them extra wounds or something like that. So there's some statistic modification that you can do as well, which is really neat.
I'm digging on that. I know we talked a bit about the fact that that is, compared to Kill Team, therefore that leads you to kind of assume that it's a skirmish-based game.
It is, yeah. It is. So you get the alternating activations, like a lot of skirmish games offer, which I find, especially, you know, that small model number, it really works great because it keeps both sides engaged. You know, one person's, you know, activating a fighter and doing things, and their opponent might be waiting to react with something so that they can counter whatever's happening. And it doesn't feel as invasive as in some other games, but it's there and it can make a large impact when you need it to. And it just adds a little bit more depth to it. So just like the big games, you know, you're moving units around. This is just each model is its own unit. So when you look at it from that eye in the sky kind of perspective, it really does not feel that much different, but it sure plays a lot faster because you're not having to move 100 gabos around or, you know, something like that.
Well, you probably feel that you're kind of in the game more because it is a you go, I go. You see alternating animation. I activate a model, you activate a model. And
the time does seem like it flies by faster, yeah.
How long does a typical game last?
When both people know the rules and, you know what they're doing or have their plan and stuff, about half hour, 45 minutes. On the longer side, maybe an hour, hour and a half if you're doing like a real in-depth teaching game kind of thing. But, I mean, that's it. Unless you're just having fun and, talking a lot and hanging out, which is, it's a great game for that too. There's no reason for a game to go longer than an hour.
I do like hanging out, kind of living in the game, enjoying the game for some whatever period of time I have devoted to that, or being able to bang out two or three games in the same amount of time if I want to.
Mm-hmm. You could run an entire campaign in an afternoon with Warcry. Like
does it have a campaign setting?
It does. So right now it's set in Gur, just like the last season of Age of Sigmar was. So all the terrain and stuff has been these gnarl oaks. They look like meat trees. They look like mussels instead of bark and stuff. But
I've had my claws on them for
fingertips. They're pretty cool.
Yeah, use in my Catechin army, like for display boards and that kind of stuff.
Oh, that'd be perfect. Yeah, they got the platforms and everything. That'd be awesome. That'd look really cool. I know our friend Chris is using them to make a Eldar Exodite table for narrative stuff. Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Digging on that. And with your forces, and you mentioned playing, how often do you go with the campaign style versus just a one-off game? And does the game hold up to either mode?
I think I've dabbled with the narrative. I've not gotten to play too much. It's really reliant on, you know, people knowing their lists and stuff. And like in my local area, anyway, I'm still building that up. Actually, I got demos going on Saturday, but they have leagues every month for both competitive, casual league play, and then narrative league play. There's no lack of opponents. And I think that both systems hold up, or I think both are all the ways of playing it hold up pretty well. So I draw a little bit. I tend to draw closer to the competitive side because that's like more list optimization and stuff like that. But in narrative, I mean, there's a little bit more restrictions on, you know, how you start out the gate. But then as you play games, more things unlock. You get to add an additional character in. You can hire more warriors and stuff to join your warband. It feels very similar to if you've ever done a Path to Glory or a Crusade. It feels very similar to that. You know, you've got your units leveling up, gaining experience, maybe some relics or unique abilities, that kind of thing. So it's very much in the same vein as the other Games Workshop games that we know and love. And then the competitive side is very similar to the competitive side of other games. You can build very tight lists that probably will steamroll.
Like have efficiencies within them.
Yeah, and that's really where I think Warcry shines is, you know, it's an ally system that's done pretty well in that you can bring, you know, a character in that may have different abilities from the rest of your warband, and those synergies then unlock with, spending ability dice on them and stuff. And it can help either you achieve some really crazy effects, or it can, you know, catapult your warband into like, you know, a higher tier. You know, they punch above their weight, that kind of thing. Just depends on what you're looking for. And I also like that, you know, you can tailor it. So I could take, you know, a basic list and, you know, play it against a new person and, you know, have the outcome have it be a really nice game, a fun game, and keep it tight. And then, you know, against a buddy that is really familiar with the game and their warband, you know, we can just say unlock it all, you know, and just go all out and have like some really bonkers high flying action going on. I mean, it's it can get to be, you know, like the fun Hero Hammer stuff of old.
And still play it within the same time frame, right? Time.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Often the competitive games go faster, I think, just because it's being aggressive is rewarded in a lot of those missions. But all in all, it's super fun. It's not like, I don't think I've had any complete shutouts or blowouts. It's always been like a really fun type game with some just awesome brutalities happening. And it's funny. A lot of times in, you know, the bigger games, you know, if you knock out your opponent's like key unit or something, they're like, oh gosh, the game is lost. I'm done. This, or they'll start, you know, maybe some salt factor rises. And, but in this, it's been really refreshing because everyone just, they celebrate like the crazy dice rolls or the, you know, wombo combo abilities going off and stuff like that. So,
With
it's a really nice community.
With boxes like the Briar and Bone, that a good place for players that may be curious to jump into?
I think so. Yes, absolutely. It's a cheaper box than the big, you know, box sets like the initial ones that we saw. So it's a lower price point. It does come with a single piece of terrain. Usually it's a pretty large piece that you can just add on, you know, other pieces as you go. And it comes with a full campaign and, you know, a lore description for both of those warbands. And then this time around, they added some fun extra stuff that no one was expecting that hopefully gives us a hint of, you know, what the next edition is going to bring with those battle traits and stuff. But yeah, I totally think that both of the Briar and Bone is a very good starting point. Both of the warbands seem pretty viable for, you know, long-term play and just diversity in play style.
Twistweld and the Turretic cohorts are the two factions in the box. And that's the Ossock Bone Reapers and the Sylvaneth and models you can only get currently in this box.
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the Sylvaneth, they've got some neat abilities to, you know, a Nova damage thing to people all around them. They've got some neat ways to heal or buff each other's attacks and stuff. They all seem to work pretty well together. And all the fighters, like I was saying earlier, they're, you know, kind of mid level. So like kind of middle of the road cost. But with that, they can really bump on the lower costed fighters like the chaff that most factions have, and also stand up to some of the heroes as well. So it works that other factions have. It works pretty well. And Twistfield's leader is really, really good. I like that she's got a great spell attack. Yeah, the Swarm Sage. She's got a great set of attacks and some great abilities too. That just, it works out great. She's lower costed and than most leaders in these bespoke or set boxes. You know,
at 190 for that, as opposed to the Cavalos Centauri on the Ossock Bone Reapers, a 235.
Right. Yeah. And usually once you get below 200 points with these leaders, they're missing something, you know, they're missing, like they're lower on wounds or lower on toughness or something like that. But the Swarm Sage, she's got 22 wounds, which is above the average. She's toughness 4, which is great for the cost. And she's got decent reach with her melee attack. And she's got a mage blast that gives her some, you know, ranged reach out and touch.
That 22 wounds characteristic. I mean, that's where there are some similarities with Kill Team, is that the models have a higher number of wounds than you might expect from the larger games that you use those models in. So, but 22 is pretty high. Like one of the things about Warcry is that they've got you do feel like you have the full experience of a fully functional model character hero with every single one of the models from the rank and file, which is the Twist Root Dryad with 10 wounds all the way up to the Swarm Sage with 22.
Right. Yeah, models in Warcry tend to have higher wounds characteristics than they would have in say a Kill Team, because there's a lot more just high flying damage out there, you know. You could compare that, like, you know, Sigmar and 40K, right? Sigmar tends to have a lot more mortal wounds bouncing all over the place and just, you know, massive damage spikes here and there. And Warcry's similar or more similar to that. Those characters, they need those wounds because at any point they could, you know, get hit for 20 damage, you know. it's not common, but it happens, you know. So having 22 wounds is a nice sweet spot, because it means that some of the biggest, punchiest fighters have a hard time one-shotting your leader. And that's good. That's a good thing.
And you play this game on a smaller board. You're not playing this on the full tabletop. You're playing on a smaller environment. Is that correct?
Right. Yeah, it's the same size as Kill Team and Combat Patrol and
Spearhead.
Spearhead, yeah.
Which is the board that comes, the collapsible foldable board that comes in mm-hmm. most.
Yeah. Yeah, it should. And I don't know if Briar and Bone comes with the board itself, but it will come with, it does come with that terrain piece. It
comes with the terrain piece and the rules.
Yeah.
Yeah, no board in there, but the board is available if you've been, like, if you got Skaventide as a for instance.
Yeah, you can play on that.
Yeah,
you could even use the terrain from that in your games of Warcry. It'll work just great. Okay. I always bring at least one warband to our on our trips, and I'll play people in the evenings after the GT's done, and we've taken over Kill Team tables before and just played on that terrain. It's like, yeah, it looks all metal, but hey, we're playing in the realm of what is Chamon in AOS.
Nice to know.
So it makes sense there's metal walls.
Yeah,
you know?
So versatile.
It just works. Yeah.
Well, Tim, thanks a lot for coming on and describing this. And I know it's a great game. You have converted many people circle. So
you're next.
I do love the game, and especially these models with the Sylvaneth. That's the army that I play the most in Sigmar.
Right on. So, yeah, those models are beautiful. So.
Yeah, I'm hooked. But anyway, thanks again for coming on, and I hope people have benefited from hearing your perspective on this. And if they have any questions, they can feel free to reach out. Happy to get them in the right direction. But Tim, have a great rest of your afternoon.
Thanks, you too.
See ya. Back to the main show.
You're listening to Forge the Narrative.
We are back, everybody. I hope you enjoyed that segment. Warcry is a great game. It plays, it's different. It's skirmish level, but in the Age of Sigmar universe. And it originally, when it came out, it was kind of like all a bunch of chaos factions competing to be, like, to get witnessed by the Pantheon type thing. Now it's a lot.
It was an interesting intro. Yeah, but it has definitely progressed in a more broader direction. But I will say, I've only played it a couple times. I have tons of the models because they're awesome looking. But I look forward to seeing how as it continues to develop, because some of the stuff's just awesome.
Tim has gotten many people into the game just with his enthusiasm and letting people take a chance on it and get their hands on it, and they immediately become hooked. It's that cool of a game. But we're going to talk about the Assassins. So the Assassins, well known, for making their appearance every now and then in Imperial forces. They're also here in this Imperial Agents book, and the Calidus is the first one up. Calidus is the one that sows the most seeds of confusion. Actually, one of the abilities here, Reign of Confusion. Once per battle, after your opponent uses a stratagem, this model can use this ability. If it does, until the end of the battle, the CP cost for your opponent must pay to use the stratagem again is increased by 1 CP. So this is what we have now kind of coined as a group, or not just us, as a collective of the Vect ability, making command points or making stratagems cost more to potentially limit what your opponent can do with them and use them. Of course, it's going to have the rule, that's in the balance update. But this is still going to be a powerful ability, still there on the Assassin, so I imagine it will still be taken.
Yeah, and they've toned it down with how some of the balances, the balance slate as well as the rule itself has been toned down, which I think is fair, and I understand.
About what stratagems it can apply to, and
right,
and then across all the
exactly.
proximity of being there.
Well, because it used to be, it just happened. And you used to have a stratagem that allowed you to do it again, which was a whole other thing. And then she also used to have the ability where she would pop up X distance away. And that is no longer a thing, which, I understand as they continue to balance and adapt it. The game's just not going to be exactly the same, and certain models are going to change. But it is still cool nonetheless.
Yep, I think that's a lot more situational, but with a movement 7 model that happens to have a 4+ and vulnerable save, and lone operative, maybe you get close.
Yeah, she's going to get around for sure.
Eversor Assassin is the next up. So the Eversor Assassin is always kind of been thought of as the elite, most aggressive, close combat type assassin.
Berserker. Berserker.
I believe they carry the Eversor Assassin around in like a small box. that they then yeah. like point towards the enemy and then open the door.
You should appreciate it. Doesn't necessarily have the same tragic kind of tang to it that Death Company does, but it is very. I definitely think that they saw the Eversore Assassin and they figured out that it would work for the Death Company. So
I don't know that, that's how that worked. I'm sure that's the right order of those things.
Yeah. Oh, I mean. I tell you, I think we've talked about it. One of the, I won't go into detail on it, but Horus Heresy, the Nemesis book is.
It's so like good.
It's like it's all about assassins, and it's great. It's an awesome one.
It's got the highly assassin recommend. On the cover. So.
It sure does. It has, which one is it? All right, you get to pronounce this one first because I'll mess it up.
What's it?
The next assassin before we'll come back to the Eversore.
Oh, but, the Calexus.
There you go, Calexus. All right, I'm going to say it exactly like you said it.
All right.
Is that what they call passing the buck?
Look, as long as we're all butchering
that's
it,
right.
it's fine.
That's right.
It's fine.
But back to the Eversore, it is really awesome. And he's actually in the combat patrol, which I thought was great, like for them to include it. His stuff, his ranged weapon, executioner pistol, range 12, 4 attacks, hits on 2s, anti-infantry, 3 up, pistol precision, and sustained hits 3, which is what the sustained hits 3. Like, I mean, we usually see sustained hits 1. Every once in a while, you see sustained hits 2. I personally right now cannot think of another weapon that has sustained hits 3. I know they're out there.
4 attacks.
I'm sure.
I mean, that's.
I know. That is
a lot. Hit it.
That's a lot coming out of a pistol. That's like one of those times where like you're. I mean, I know that they for the most part, you can appreciate it in like John Wick where like, oh, he actually had to reload his pistol. But there's some of these movies where you're out there and you're like, that pistol had sustained hits because there's no way there was that much ammo inside of it. And that's what the Eversore is going to do. He doesn't ever have to reload. He just sustained hits 3. It's ridiculous.
The sword, the dagger, has sustained hits 3 also.
Yeah, it just pops off. He literally, like, he has a rule in here. It says, pop off, king, sustained hits 3.
That is not verbatim from the text.
Melee weapon, anti-infantry 3, precision, sustained hits 3, power sword and neuro gauntlet. Attack 6, hits on 2, strength 5, AP minus 2, 2 damage. That's pretty good. He is a blender. That is a blender.
With precision too, so that's incredibly powerful.
He's coming for you. And it's one of those things, and so we didn't hit it on the Calexus, but I really want to hit this in Shadow Assignment. Did you talk about this one?
No, we did not.
Yeah, oh man. Okay, so first of all, he can't be your ward. I'm sorry, he can't just like... runner. I mean, I think that if a Death Company captain can be a ward, then I think that, you know, Calexus or an Eversore assassin should be able to. But
it's
whatever.
On the list. Not immediately excluded is what you're saying.
If Karn the Betrayer can be a warlord, anyways, all right. If your army faction is Agents of the Imperium, then during the Declare Battle Formation step, you can replace this model with a different assassin model, provided the total points value does not exceed the points value of the model it replaced. Your army cannot include duplicates of the same model. So you may switch stuff around, but you just can't, like, you know, bring in something that you've already got on the table. But it's still pretty cool.
I like that. The overkill rule here. Once per battle in your movement phase, this model can use this ability before it makes a normal move. If it does, until the end of the turn, add 6 inches to the model's move characteristic and add 3 to the attack characteristic of this model's melee weapons.
It's so, coming for you, man. It's like a missile.
So Scout 9 on the Eversore, so can already start close, can move 9 inches, add 6 to that, can move 15 inches, and then a charge, and then add 3 to the attacks list, 9 attacks with everything you said, anti-infantry 3+, precision, and sustained hits 3.
It's awesome.
Pretty good. I used one of the older Eversore Assassin models as my Sly Marbo for years.
Oh, nice.
Because he got he basically has a dagger and a cool gun, which is what Sly has.
Yeah.
But said the Eversore was in like a black bodysuit. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I love the Eversore, have a number of them. But I use a kind of modded Cypher model actually as my Eversore.
Wow. That sounds pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fun. I enjoy it a lot.
The next
and
one
kind of plays into it.
Is the Calexus assassin. This is the anti-psyker assassin.
Which is fun. I mean, again, like looking at it, psychic assassin, each time a select a psyker unit is a target for the weapon, which is its Animus Speculum. Until those attacks are resolved, change the attack's characteristic of this weapon to 6. So it goes from 3 to 6 when you're targeting psychers, which is, again, how the whole codex kind of leans into exactly what they're supposed to do functionally, I think is pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's anti-psyker 2 plus assault precision and then psychic assassin.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
24 inch range, normally attacks 3, but goes to 6, hits on 2, strength 5, neg 2, AP D3 damage. So taking out, you know, characters in units, very achievable with this.
Yeah, exactly. And then it's also got, so as a abomination, because it's a blank, has a feel no pain 2-up ability against psychic attacks. Etheric Emergence, when this model is set up on the battlefield using the deep strike, it can perform this. If it does, this model can be set up anywhere on the battlefield that is more than 3 inches horizontally away from all enemy units, but until the end of the turn is not eligible to declare a charge. So it can just pop up in there and just pick off some psychic hero you've got somewhere.
Can be terrifying.
It's pretty tight.
The Soulless Horror, once per battle at start of the command phase, this model can use this ability. If it does, each enemy unit within 9 of this model must take a battle shock test, subtracting 1 from the test, or subtract 2 if that unit is a psyker.
Which is good. I mean, again, like, it has a lot of other good stuff, and so I'm glad that's not like the only thing it hinges on, but at the same time, it could have some play that...
Yeah, that's the start of any command phase. So your opponents, before they score, like, you know...
That's right.
Let's try to knock some points off.
Yeah, I like that a lot.
Vindicare Assassin. This is the sniper, like the long-range sniper. Dark Heresy, the role-playing game. I ran a campaign's probably a strong word. We played for a couple of months and got through a couple of adventures, and the players had to contend with a Vindicare Assassin at one point.
How'd that go?
Not well for them, actually. There's a mechanic that is basically fate points that you could use to save yourself, and that was basically like a fate point burn encounter until they figured out what was going on.
You died. Somehow you were standing next to someone and you both died.
That was kind of the description. It was like, well, so-and-so, I can't remember the character's name, so-and-so's head explodes. That player was like, well, I run to the truck. I'm like, your head has exploded.
Yeah. Your body actually did keep running for a second, but yeah.
I was like, I use a fate point. Now you're on the way to the truck. You know, that was basically how I...
Yeah, good.
Vindicares. That is, it's a cool model, always been cool. I believe, while not the first assassin, it was the template for what, there was an assassin model that looked kind of like what the Vindicare became. And the Vindicare was the first assassin that we got as, a playable named type assassin in 40K, if I remember right.
Yeah, and it's been one that I think a lot of folks have had kind of a love-hate relationship with, because he has this, you know, I mean, he's awesome. And he is one of the mainstays. And you did see the, you know, there's the Warhammer commemorative model that people could get from Warhammer Plus subscription.
That was year one, the first year.
Yeah, amazing and awesome looking, because he's like up in a like a hide site. But his Exodus rifle, it has devastating wounds. It's heavy, ignores cover and precision. 48 inches, 1 attack, ballistic skill 2 plus, strength 8, AP minus 3, D3 plus 3 damage. And then you have Shield Breaker. Well, first, each time, dead shot, each time this model makes a ranged attack, when selecting targets for that attack, you can ignore the lone operative ability. And then Shield Breaker, once per battle, when selecting targets for this model's Exodus rifle, it can fire a Shield Breaker round. If it does, until the end of the phase, each time this model makes an attack with that weapon, add 1 to the wound roll, and any successful wound roll scores a critical wound. So that means it's going straight to devastating wounds, which, I mean, again, awesome, great, but that is still one shot. And so that's where people's love-hate deal, because you'd just be surprised how many ones you can roll playing that.
That is subject to some extreme variance. I think you're right. Yeah.
Fair.
But having the strength 8, neg 3, D3 plus 3 damage, precision, ignoring cover, so basically always getting that AP outside of invulnerable saves. Pretty good. Just, you know, clean living, you know? Like, have some good points. There have been times in the past, too, where the pistol, like, was better than the rifle. Like, you would carry him
around.
That's
true.
Because it could shoot into combat and that kind of stuff. It's, you know, different rules now.
It's got 3 shots, so that's 2 more than the rifle. Hitting
also
on 2,
with precision.
6, AP minus 2, 3 damage, devastating wounds, precision.
Fly 3 damage.
Cover.
Not bad at all.
Nope.
Yeah, and you can ignore the lone operative ability when you're shooting.
That's right.
Which I think is really good because you can maximize that 48-inch range from the rifle if you wanted to.
Yeah, well, and for Deadshot, you can for the pistol and the rifle, but Shieldbreaker is specifically for the rifle. So, cool distinction.
Once per battle, when selecting targets from the model, the model's Exodus rifle can fire a Shieldbreaker round. If it does, until the end of the phase, each time this model makes an attack with that weapon, add one to the wound roll, and any successful wound rolls go to the critical wounds like you were talking about. So that is real good.
Yeah. But I mean, again, all the assassins, you can see where, you know, if you brought one and you wanted to switch it around and bring a different one, there's applicability to that, the shadow assignment rule that they have. And so you just bring arguably, you know, whichever one costs the most points so that there's no issues switching them up, and then do that and you can play around with it. I think it's pretty awesome.
Those are the assassins, the suite of assassins and inquisitors available in the Imperial Agents books. So lots of character, no pun intended, to work into your forces. About that encounter, just so people don't think I'm a heartless game master, is that they eventually did go root out the assassin out of their roost and actually steal his rifle. So they got to have the Exodus rifle for a period of time.
I will say that game could be brutally lethal.
It really was. Yeah.
I think I've played I don't want to call them campaigns either, but I've played it twice. And yeah, I feel like somebody was dying every single session. It's pretty brutal at times.
I mean, 40K is, you know, it's a rough place, you know?
Totally grimdark. It's just, don't get too attached to your characters. Maybe make a backup one, too. You know?
I did like how the game had a bit of a safety net, you know, for the players. But didn't lose any of the dangerous touch to it.
Mm-hmm.
It was fun for a while. Definitely enjoyed it. But it was just, you know, when we started talking about that, kind of brought back the memory. Y'all want to talk about some Blood Angel stuff on the Warhammer community for a few minutes before we wrap up?
Yes, please. I feel like it's time. I love World Eaters. I love them. I love them. But you've heard me every once in a while. I get it. I got to drag myself out of the depths of wherever I find myself, I have three, I like to think, borderline badly painted Vindicators that I love near and dear to my heart that I have not been able to play for a minute with my World Eaters. And I thought you were going to get the same, Paul. I thought Sanguinary Guard, you know, Firstborn, I thought they were out. I thought they weren't coming back for you.
Oh, really?
I thought we were going to have something to share. I thought we were going to, you know, we were going to have something in common. I thought Dante was going to be the only boy in gold armor. And then Warcom just blew it out of the water. You got Sanguinary Guard. And they look good.
I did actually, it was about a month ago or so. Someone said, I heard that Death Company are, you know, not going to exist anymore. I was like, Death Company are all I said was like the Death Company are like the core of the Blood Angels. I'd be shocked if that.
Yeah. They show us a new box and it's got Lamartes all over it.
Yeah. But with Sanguinary Guard, so the models on both the Sanguinary, I posted a couple of videos on the YouTube channel just of quick takes of the models as they were on the Warhammer community site. And the Sanguinary, I'm in two minds because while I do think the model looks great, we play a game where line of sight's important and the wings are still on that model. And now it's a bigger model and now the wings are probably going to be bigger. And so I'm thinking oh my goodness, how many times are going to get shot? But that's not really the way to approach beholding the brand new sculpt. But that did cross my mind because I've actually exposed. I think I lost the Sanguinary one time because I just didn't turn him sideways, so you got to see his wings. Or maybe it could have been the other way. Maybe I exposed line of sight because the wings weren't covering the right model. Who knows? But the wings could be a liability.
I mean, I'm a huge fan of the Sanguinary Guard, the old models. The new ones look good. They look great. Again, we kind of go back to this whole Sigmarite thing. But they do look great in their Primaris army. Clearly, all the Sanguinary Guard have crossed the Rubicon at this point. But they do, I don't know if you go back to that Warcom article, you look at them, Some of them got their swords up in the air, so you may need to find some way to hide that.
A bigger model, taller model, also with the swords in the air. Thankfully, terrain is a little bit more kind of like in the tournament setting. It's obscuring or it kind of pass fail if you're on one side or the other.
Well, and when you're holding your sword up in the air like that, you just got to hide behind a hopefully straight tree. You'll be okay.
I think you just need to have faith in the Emperor. I mean, yeah. Somebody called the Inquisition here.
I was going to say, that's what Inquisitor Greyfax would say.
Yeah, we'll work on that.
It's good. Okay.
But with the, you know, there's the Sanguinary Guards specifically are drawing some criticism because the armor is a little bit less ornate than the current Sanguinary Guard models.
And they lost their wings.
See, the wings, as I travel, you know, with the army, like when I'm, and so the wings never stayed on mode. They would always snap off, and to the point where I just like quit using the wings.
Well, see, there was room for growth there. You could have made a whole hobby session on how to figure out how to travel with wings.
Yeah, now, take them off. That was the. So I don't mind that they don't have the wings, and I do like the bigger jump packs, and I do think they look distinctly different enough from like the Intercessor with jump packs to where you're never going to confuse one. They'll be gold, but you're never going to confuse them with that. But I think that we have lots of golden armored marine type bodies to compare these models to.
Sure.
And so I think that it's completely okay for the folks out there that wanted more from those models to ask for more and to, you know, to feel a certain way about the way that they look.
That's fair.
But at the same time, I do like them, and I am looking forward to, like, I also have the benefit of having a very, like, deep bits box. And where I did not use some of the bits from the current Sanguinary Guard kits on the Sanguinary Guard, maybe fashion up. It's totally escaping me now, but I will turn those bits into some fandangling for the new Sanguinary Guard.
Are you trying to say that you're going to riz up the new Sanguinary Guard? I think that's exactly what you're trying to say.
That's probably it. But if I want to, I mean, like, sometimes I just don't.
Of course.
Why wouldn't
you want to riz up your Sanguinary Guard, though, Paul?
Well, because you got to paint all those parts. That's why.
I mean, then you bring in your new Dante, and now you've got the OG Rizzler himself.
Yep, they are going to look real good with Dante. That is for
they
sure.
Will. They will.
Are the bases the same size?
We don't know yet, but it doesn't look like it. It looks like they may be on 40 mils.
Yeah,
which is, I mean, that's big for space and everything. And flying two up save models are still a big deal. And if they have, you know, the old ones were a pretty effective bodyguard unit. I imagine, like to think that these are probably the same. So that'll be interesting to see what their new rules say.
Yeah, agreed. And look, it's very difficult to discern any of that, like playability and stats, just from looking at pictures and thinking real hard about it. but, you know, and also difficult to just see, you know, real what base sizes are, but they look like they're probably like they're larger bases. And, you know, that also has some different playability, like impacts they were talking about. But as far as like looking at the models themselves right now, like some of the choices that even the painters that made, like the tabards being red on these, I like the choice, but I think it's kind of like gets, while we're looking at it, it's kind of getting lost as an embellishment piece. Like there's plenty of room to embellish there. And we're also coming from the Sanguinary Guard before that had like sculpted knees, and none of the ones we're seeing right now have sculpted like knee pads and that kind of stuff. So, you know, I think it's perfectly okay to ask and to want more from that. But these are spectacular looking miniatures, and I actually do like all the detail, and I don't think there's going to be any confusing them with like other jump pack units in your army.
I feel like there are a bunch of Stormcast bits and stuff that you could also use to kind of like zhuzh up a little bit.
100%.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm not super familiar with Stormcast, but I feel like their helmets are spectacular and probably would just fit perfectly on there. Like there are some Stormcasts that have really fancy hats. So
well, just armor across the board. And this is not even for me, it is not a critique on the Sanguinary Guard, but there are a lot of great modding options to bring out from the Stormcast and everything. And so I think it's going to be really cool. I think that there's a lot of opportunity to it. And I think it shouldn't be just thrown out right away that, oh, well, I'm not going to. But I think it's worth looking at those models and even some of the just the different loadouts and whatnot. I think it'll be cool.
Well, really anxious to see where the Blood Angel stuff goes. I mean, as you might suspect. So we'll be bringing you news from that as soon as we possibly can.
To say that the group chat lit up when this was announced would be the understatement of the year.
Weird.
Who would have saw that coming?
But I do. I like the Sanguinar. I really do. You know, but also I've got this perspective of, you know, like a grindy tournament player every now and then. And that's why I'm like, oh man, it's a bigger base for the Sanguinar. Like, can he still swoop in? Like, am I going to be able to squeeze him into little places and stuff? You know, that's tomorrow's problem. Let's just look at how awesome this model is today.
Right.
But I'm pumped, obviously, for the Blood Angels and cannot wait to get some of these golden armored heroes in my hands and on the tables coming to a face near you.
I just want to give like mad props to whoever painted the Sanguinar as well. Like that armor is amazing. Like it's all, I think, non-metallic metal.
Oh, wow.
Look, if it's the most metallic-y of the non-metallics, if that's the truth. But look at the scroll work though on all the litanies. Like that is,
and like his little vial is painted amazing.
Yeah,
anyway,
it is.
Yeah, like this, it actually could be one of the best things that I've seen the painting studio put out for a promo. I think it's beautiful.
Yeah, agreed. Cannot wait. Very excited. Well, more to come on that. But definitely wanted to talk about the initial impressions for that people are starting to resonate with the Blood Angels. And it's, hopefully this is just of more of what is to come. We'll see. That is our show this week. Hope you all enjoyed the Warcry segment and us rattling on about some Inquisitors and Assassins. It's been a pleasure talking to y'all. Make sure to hit us up with some likes and some shares and 5-star reviews if you haven't already. Means a whole lot. And to our Patreon subscribers, thank you all very much from the bottom of our heart. That is one way to support the show. If you are so inclined, check that out. Every tier is awesome. Hope you have a good rest of y'all's week.
See ya.
Bye, everybody.
Tenets demand you tune in next week for the greater good, of course.